is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, April 19th, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in Montana. Taylor Schwenk is working from ESPN today, right? I'm looking at your background.
Yes, my white blank background today. I am looking out at rainy Bristol. I can see a giant satellite in front of my face. It's, an average New England spring
day. Dolly.
No Dolly.
No Dolly, no Bola in the background.
Nope. Just you and me, Buster, just like it always should be.
All right. Well, it's a Friday, so we're going to give the power rankings for this week. I know, Taylor, you're hanging on the, just hanging on the edge of your seat, wondering where the Orioles are. I've got the Atlanta Braves still at number one. And by the way, we're going to see them on Sunday Night Baseball this week, playing host to the Texas Rangers. We've got the Dodgers at number two. Are you okay with those so far?
So far, so good. I like it.
Okay, three, I've got your Orioles.
I like it. Maybe this is just me being a self-bassicating Orioles fan. I feel like they should be behind the Yankees and the Guardians right now.
Okay, well, I've got the Yankees at four, and I've got the Guardians at five. Do I think that the Guardians at the end of the year are going to be finishing as one of the top teams in baseball? No, but I think at some point you got to reward the Guardians for how they're playing, Taylor. So I got them in the top five.
I think they are top five worthy, and I agree. I don't know how they'll finish at the end of the year, but this is right now. This is a snapshot of Friday, April 19th, first thing in the morning. That's how we're feeling about it. So not projecting, nice. Just looking at the body of work.
In the bottom three, I've got Marlins at number 28, the Rockies at number 29, the White Sox at number 30. What's noteworthy about that, no Oakland A's in the bottom three after their series win over the St. Louis Cardinals. So, man, it feels like a milestone moment when the A's are not in the bottom three of the power rankings with what's going on in recent years. Some of the series to look ahead this weekend, I mentioned we've got on Sunday night the Texas Rangers against the Atlanta Braves. They play this weekend, Tampa Bay facing the Yankees. Baltimore, Kansas City. Sneaky great series there because the Royals are off to such a good start. Toronto playing at San Diego. I've told you all along, I think San Diego is a lot better than what people realize. Are you buying?
Yeah, I think so, too. They're scoring a lot of runs. You know, they've got good pitching. And I think this series against Toronto will be interesting. Let's, you know, Toronto taking out the Yankees. First series loss for the Yanks this year at the hand of the Blue Jays. I'd like to see what they got, too. You know, that's a nice start for them. I feel like the Rays and the Blue Jays are sort of in the same area right now. So this weekend for both teams.
Red Sox, they're kind of in the same group, too, that if you told us right now that they were going to win like 85 to 88 games, that wouldn't necessarily be out of the question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so it should be a fun weekend of baseball.
All right, and this weekend on Friday, more specifically, Justin Verlander will make a season debut for the Houston Astros pitching against the Washington Nationals. The Ones Who Get It Done is brought to you by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. You know who got it done on Wednesday? That'd be Tanner Houck. In an hour and 48 minutes, the White Sox right-hander threw a complete game shutout at the Cleveland Guardians.
The 1-1. And a ground ball to the middle. Hamilton up and over. And what a performance tonight by Tanner Houck. A complete game. The first by a Red Sox pitcher since May 28, 2022. Incredible.
That was Dave O'Brien, of course, on Nesson. Taylor, he was impressive. Like right away, seeing his stuff, the slider and the fastball and the split finger fastball, to me, he's been an embodiment of how good the Red Sox starting pitching has been this year. They've got other issues, but their starting pitching is excellent. Your Orioles are facing the Minnesota Twins. It was 2-2, bottom of the ninth inning on Wednesday, and this is what happened.
Julian straight up at second. The 1-2 pitch. Fly ball right field. This one is way out there. Kirilloff looking it back. Cedric Mullins. Two-run walk-off. And the Orioles sweep it against Minnesota.
The Angels had a really nice comeback against the Tampa Bay Rays, capped off by this.
And here's the pitch on Ward. He swings at that one, and he lifts the ball in the shallow right field. That's going to drop in for a base hit. The throw to the plate is late, and coming in is Rendon. He scores from second. Taylor Ward, who leads the AL and runs batted in, drives in the go-ahead run. It's 5-4 Angels.
Mets' Terry Smith on that call. So a nice win for Anaheim. And the Mets won again with help from Harrison Bader.
So here's Bader with two out. Breaking ball hit deep to left field. If it's fair, it's gone, and it is a home run. Harrison Bader, he managed to keep it 6 or 8 feet to the fair side of the foul pole down the left field line, well beyond the Great Wall of Flushing. A two-run homer for Bader. It is his first home run as a New York Met, and the Mets now lead it 6-1.
Since I posted last week as my hot take that the Mets are in trouble, Taylor, they haven't lost a game, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, they're two games over 500, looking pretty decent. Mets fans, you regret already jumping off the ledge.
There you go. All right, what else you got, Taylor?
Buster, new episode of College Game Day. The draft is finally inching around the corner. Peter, Victor Thamel, and Reese Davis, they talked to Field Yates. Great combo, some good defensive line conversation, and a really fun story. Buster, do you ever do this? So Pete Thamel is a newsbreaker, and you don't do that, I guess, as much anymore, but he is known for leaving dinners to just, like, pick up the phone to talk to someone and break some news. Have you ever done that? Do you do that a lot?
Oh, a ton. Yeah, oh, yeah. Your whole life is invaded by all that. You know, all those things that happen, absolutely.
Oh, it's so fun because Pete is like he's just like so well known for it. Everyone has a story about it. So a new entry into that book on the College Game Day podcast. You can listen to it on this platform. You can watch it on YouTube. And also, if you haven't already, go back and listen to Wednesday's episode. Great conversation with Christian Yelich. Really good conversation about hitting and how he's evolved as a hitter. Hembo had a really nice question on what he's been doing on the field recently. And we're again reading between the lines. I don't think that 10-day IL stint is anything to worry about, Brewers fans. So good combo all around. Great week on the podcast, everyone.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkson.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkson, who covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, how you doing?
I'm well, Buster. How's it going?
I'm doing great. Now, you have seen a lot of really great teammates in the past. You've seen a lot of bad teammates, I'm sure, as well, in your time covering baseball. Last week, when we heard Roddy Tellez step forward and defend his teammate David Bednar after he got booed in Pittsburgh, was one of the cooler things that I've seen teammates do. What are some examples of teammates doing things that really caught your attention, have stuck with you through the years?
Yeah, Buck Showalter told me that Don Mattingly, in his final year, went to Buck and said, "You got to take me out of the four spot. I don't belong in there anymore," which is just stunning because he was the best player on the team for years. And he went to Buck and said, "You got to take me out of the four spot." Normally, that's the manager's job, but Mattingly made it easy for Buck. When the season was over, he went to Buck and said, "You got to get another first baseman. I'm not good enough to play first base for the Yankees anymore, and that's when they got Tino Martinez. This is what great teammates do. They recognize, they look at the big picture, they see what's going on, and then they act upon it. Same Don Mattingly. I have too many Don Mattingly stories, but Ruben Sierra hit a home run once, first home run as a Yankee, took his sweet time running around the bases, and Buck was ready to go tell Sierra, like, and Mattingly said, I'll take this. And he took Sierra up the runway at Yankee Stadium and quietly told him, this is not what we do with the Yankees. You can't do that here. This is what great teammates do. They protect their teammates by, you know, they can admonish them, but they do it quietly, privately. So to me, Don Mattingly is as good a teammate as I've ever seen. And those are three examples.
Yeah, one of my most enjoyable stories to work on last year was about Kyle Schwarber being a great teammate among the Phillies. And the stories that, you know, I heard from, you know, coaches, from players were really cool. And it was clear that Kyle Schwarber, and I think it was Kevin Long, their hitting coach, who told me that every day Schwarber thinks about two things. One is winning, and two is how can he help the team? How can he be a better teammate? And he will, you know, grab a coach after a game and they'll talk about, you know, this, you know, player on the team who doesn't seem like he, you know, has necessarily been a part of things, or there's some concern about how the guy is conducting himself, and they will strategize on how to get that guy under the fold, you know, into the fold and feel like he's closer to the other guys on the team. I thought, Tim, that when the Yankees not only traded for Juan Soto, who's a great hitter, which would, you know, help his transition with the Yankees, but also when they got Alex Verdugo, that both those guys potentially would benefit from having Aaron Judge on the team. You know, to me, there are not a lot of, you know, big time leaders who can make a difference, but Aaron Judge seems to be one of those guys. So to me, it can be something that can manifest itself in the standings when you get a leader who pulls along other players, makes them comfortable, you know, settles situations like you were referring to with Mattingly.
Yeah, and Nate Eovaldi's the same way, Buster, as you know.
Yes.
When Chris Young went out to rebuild that team, he went after good players, but he went after clubhouse presence. And that's what Nate Eovaldi is. When Josh Smith, one of their infielders, is off to a great start, by the way, really hot, filling in for some injured people. He told me last spring when, like, three different guys made the roster for the first time in their careers, Nate Eovaldi bought them all a watch just to show them, like, you're on the team, we know who you are, and you're with us now. So I spent a lot of time around the Rangers in the postseason last year, and I'm telling you, Nate Eovaldi's as good a clubhouse guy, leader, teammate that you're going to find, especially from a pitcher, because it's hard to be, you know, that leader when you're not an everyday player. He is pitching every fifth day.
Dane Dunning told me a similar story, 2023. Nathan Eovaldi around, you know, and went through side sessions with him. And he talked about how Eovaldi went out and watched every bullpen session. And I asked Eovaldi about that. When was his habit of going and, you know, watching bullpen sessions and watching a teammate's mechanics and maybe going up to them during the course of a game and giving him some tips? He said he learned it from Clayton Kershaw. When he was in L.A., Kershaw would go out and watch every bullpen session among the other starting pitchers, because he felt like that's how he'd be in a position to give feedback. And so Eovaldi's planing off of that. You know, that's what being a good teammate is all about. So I was going to ask you about this. I found this to be interesting. You know, when the NFL coordinators are hired and offenses and defenses are seemingly transformed almost from year to year. And in baseball, I think you'd agree with me, that doesn't happen very often. It takes longer than that to affect change. But look what's happened in Boston. When Craig Breslow was hired to be the head of baseball operations, I think the perception in the industry was that the best thing he brought to the table was his understanding of pitching. And he went out and he hired Andrew Bailey. And if you look at the Red Sox rotation this year, a 1.85 ERA, that's the first in Major League Baseball, 1.00 WHIP, first in Major League Baseball, 572 OPS, first in baseball. And in watching Tanner Houck play, and I can't remember which of their announcers said, it might have been Kevin Youkilis, about how it feels like that the gone from being a South team in the strike zone, Tim, to being more of an East-West team, throwing a ton of breaking balls. It feels like that, you know, Craig Breslow, Andrew Bailey made a huge difference for the Red Sox right away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tanner Houck, as you said, has a 1.35 ERA. He threw a shutout yesterday in under 100 pitches. No Red Sox pitcher since Clay Buchholz 2014 had done that. He got nine. All his strikeouts yesterday were swing and misses, which is really telling. You know, he's got 26 strikeouts now this year, third strike, swing and miss. That slider is tremendous. And you said it, Buster, when I know we're only 3 weeks in, but a 1.85 ERA from your starters is really amazing. And Andrew Bailey's had quite a bit to do with that. So I'm with you. I mean, that lineup with the Red Sox, I look at and go, oh, my gosh, how are they going to score enough runs to win 81 games? But with the pitching that they have, they could win more than that because their starting pitching is so great. And it's partly because of the change in the pitching coach and the general manager.
You can have managers who are, you know, tough guys and in some regards for players, you know, there's a barrier between them and the players. I always thought, Tim, that the best coaches were guys who were empathetic, who connected really well with players on a day-to-day basis. You know, I'll think of a guy like Dave Righetti is having great empathy for other people. Merv Rettman, the hitting coach who I covered, he had that connection with players. I think Tim Hires, the Rangers hitting coach, he's that type of guy. Ron Washington. Who are some of the best coaches that you've seen in your time covering baseball?
Well, you named a few of them. I covered Merv Rettman when he was the hitting coach with the Rangers a million years ago. And he just had a way with hitters where he could go speak to them. And it's really important, the bedside manner that you have with your players. I mean, you have to recognize this guy is in trouble. I need to help him. He is searching for help. I need to help him. Aaron Boone tells a story. I'm not going to mention who the coach was, but Boone was hitting, you know, 180 on June the 3rd. And he walked down to the batting cage at 1:30 in the afternoon, like 6 hours before the game. And the hitting coach just looked at him like, oh my God, like here he comes again, you know? And Boone has to look at him and say, look, I don't want to be here, but you're supposed to help me. Great coaches are exactly that, Buster. They're empathetic and they recognize hardest game in the world to play, and even the best players are going to struggle terribly.
And one of my favorite stories about a coach lacking empathy was about the Hall of Famer Ted Williams, and it came from Charlie Manuel, who told the story about how when he was a young player, he's getting it in the batting cage. It's a cold day, and he feels like he can't get the ball out of the infield. And he's struggling. He's hit the ball at the top of the cage. And Ted Williams is about 50 years old, according to telling of it. And Ted Williams started to get frustrated with Charlie and a teammate, and he just grabbed a bat out of one of their hands and gets into the cage. It was like, here, you do it like this. And he got this fat old man, 50 years old, begins to launch balls into the right field stands. And Charlie said to me, if I didn't feel bad enough about myself at the end of that session, I certainly did.
Yeah, Tony Gwynn did something like that to his San Diego State teammates when they weren't hitting at all. He's the man, he's the coach of the team, and he's sick and he's dying of cancer. And he was so tired of watching them. He said, look, let me show you how you do this. And he got in the cage and hit line drives all over the field. And the guys looked at him like, oh, my gosh, he's sick, he's heavy, and he's still a better hitter than we are.
All right. So can we say that at the beginning of the year, we have some indications that the two central divisions, which generally speaking have been the weakest divisions in baseball over the last 15 years, are gaining strength, that the gap between the American League Central, National League Central, and the other divisions is closing? Are you buying?
Yeah, I'm buying. I think the Royals are better than people think they are, and they've shown it so far. You know, Brady Singer and, you know, Cole Reagans and, you know, Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo's been really good, and they can score runs. They have a young, hungry, athletic, aggressive team. I think already they're in it for the long haul. Already I think the Guardians are better than people think, and that's, although Shane Bieber loss is really going to hurt, they've been a better offensive team. A little bit more production, I think, than we anticipated. So those are two teams in the AL Central. And again, I like the Tigers coming in, and I think they're going to finish above 500. And in the National League, you know, the Pirates have some interesting players on that team. And now with, you know, Paul Skeens on the way eventually, you know, Jared Jones and Mitch Keller, they've got some decent starting pitching. David Bednar, we talked about, is a top flight closer. And, you know, O'Neill Cruz is healthy again. So I think they're in it for the long haul. I think the Cubs are. I think the Brewers are. The Cardinals have some work to do, and the Reds are right there. Both of those divisions are clearly better than I thought they would be.
So the Dodgers lost their series to the Washington Nationals. And Tim, let me give you some numbers about their 7 through 9 hitters in their lineup. 251 plate appearances this season, just 4 doubles, 4 home runs, and a triple slash line of 170, 227, 239. What is going on?
Yeah, it is really interesting. Poor Chris Taylor, such a good guy and such a real baseball player for years, is hitting like 030. He has one hit a whole year. And, you know, Buster, we talk about lineups and everything, and I've said many times, I think 1 through 4 on the Dodgers this year statistically will be the greatest 1 through 4 in the history of baseball if we gauge it by OPS, let's say. That's how good the top is. But I've always felt like you gauge a lineup like who's your 7-hitter and are you getting anything from the bottom of the lineup? It's one thing that the Rangers had last year, the world champion Rangers. They were, you know, Josh Young hit 8th in a couple of playoff games last year, and that guy could really hit. So I don't know what to make of that Dodger to change Gavin better than this. So is Chris Taylor, so are some other guys, but it's hard to score a ton of runs if you got 3 outs in the order every night. And that's how it's been basically so far.
Another example of what you're talking about, Orlando Arcia opted to a great start hitting at the bottom of the Braves lineup. And we saw last year, you know, the depth of their lineup, basically 1 through 9. All right. On Wednesday, we heard one of the best post-game interviews ever. This was Pete Fairbanks about a poor outing he had against the Angels.
Matter of command, location, selection, anything specific?
No, I thought it generally sucked. I didn't think it was a specific suck. I thought it was like an all-encompassing type of suck. So, you know, we're going to try and rectify that. But for right now, I'm going to be pretty pissed about it.
Where do you kind of go from here? Is it looking at tape? Is it going through mechanics? Where do you kind of go from here?
You tell me. I've tried that. If you got an answer, I'd love to hear. Just, you know, not going to let it beat me up for, I'll maybe give it till 10. It's 9:44 right now. We'll give it 16 minutes of salt, and then we'll, you know, get back on the bump and figure it out.
So there was Peter Banks saying he's going to allow himself, Tim, to go through 16 minutes of sulking, and then he was going to go and address the problem. What do you think?
Well, Pete Fairbanks is one of my new favorite players in the major leagues, Buster. I did a story this spring about him and Colin Poche, his dear buddy and bullpen mate, doing the New York Times crossword puzzle. And they did it they do it every day. And they, with me sitting there, they did it in 37 minutes. What really struck me is that Pete Fairbanks' vocabulary is way better than mine. And I am a writer. And he is one of the smartest people I've ever seen wear a major league uniform. It is really, he is wicked smart, and his, you know, ACT scores and everything else match it. So when he is quotable like this and funny like this, don't be surprised, because he is a go-to interview guy. Because A, he's very honest, he's very blunt, but he's also really smart. So I got a chuckle out of that interview, but I'm not surprised, because he's also, you know, this is my fault. I got to move on.
Earlier this week, Whitey Herzog passed away, and our old friend Peter Gammons tweeted out that Whitey Herzog was the best talent evaluator he's ever spoken with. What do you got on Whitey Herzog?
Yeah, I think what made Whitey a Hall of Fame manager was him recognizing immediately what we have here and how we're going to play here. You know, the whole Whitey ball is now a giant cliche, but he recognized these are the players we have. Here's how we're going to win. We're going to beat the ball into the astroturf. We're going to outrun everyone. We're going to steal in every opportunity. And you're right. Whitey could see a player and recognize him right away, good or bad. as fast as anyone I've ever seen. And years after he retired, you know, he was, I saw him in Cooperstown and we sat and had a conversation, and we were also on a Hall of Fame committee together, and he was late 80s. And I was shocked how his recall, he could remember anything. He could call, he could remember details about players and their swing and their throwing motion from the 60s. It was unbelievable. So it's so sad because Whitey was one of the great ambassadors for the game, but just one of the smarter baseball men I've ever met.
All right, Tim, good to talk with you. Have fun this weekend.
Okay, Buster. Talk to you soon.
Matty Tellez plays for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Rowdy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, Buster.
So last week, a situation happened with your teammate David Bednar during a Pirates home game. This was you right after the game walking up as he was getting ready to talk to reporters.
She called me, put on air. This is the pride of Pittsburgh to everybody. We don't do that out here. We're a good team. We're winning for a reason. We're going to get our man back on track. But what happened today is, I think, unacceptable. And we as a group in Pittsburgh got to be better. It's an all-star for a reason. And we just have to be better. So that being said, two-time all-star.
So I've been covering baseball for more than 30 years. One of the coolest things that I saw. Just can you give me the backstory on that? You know, how that took place. And when you, first off, the reaction that you felt inside when you heard him being booed and sort of how that came together.
Yeah, you know, I haven't been here long, but, you know, playing against the Central for a few years now. And, you know, I know when he came into the game, more often than not, he was shutting it down. And that was it. When he came out, you knew the game was over. Pirates are going to pull out a win. So to be on his side now, seeing that and knowing who he is, you know, he comes out and he competes every day. He's a great, great clubhouse guy. He's phenomenal human. He's awesome in the community. He's born and raised in Pittsburgh, still lives there. So for me to kind of see that, you know, when you have a guy going through a tough stretch, and, you know, we all go through tough stretches, years, months, whatever it is, you know, you don't ever want to be feeling that way he did when he was coming off the mound. You know, I think he felt more than letting down his team. And, you know, I wanted him to know that we all have his back. We all want him to run out there every ninth inning. We want him out there. You know, and I just felt like it was something that it wasn't for me. It wasn't for the team. It was for him, you know, to know that he has everybody has his back, you know, especially even when it's a new guy that's never even really spent a ton of time with them. So, you know, for me, it was just, you know, he deserved to have his teammates know that he's our guy and he's the guy we want out there every day. So it just kind of stunk, you know, hearing that, especially for me, kind of hearing that, knowing that who he is as a person in the short time that I've known him.
So when did you make up your mind that you were going to do that? Did you talk to anybody before you did it, or you just see what the camera's gathering? You know, idiots like me gathering in that horseshoe around a player in that moment. Tell me about the backstory, how you went up to do that.
You know what happens in the clubhouse kind of stays in the clubhouse, and I really felt like somebody needed to say something in the moment. You know, it's an emotional time for people when you're struggling, you know, and we're people just like everybody else. You know, we breathe, we eat, we go to sleep, we have, you know, a house, we have normal lives like everybody else. We're just very blessed that we get to do this for a living. But we still have emotions, we still have feelings. So I just wanted to kind of sit there and reflect on like times that I've struggled and people that have picked me up. And, you know, when I was over there and I kind of saw it on his face that, you know, he was struggling right there. And, you know, nobody wants to struggle. But I just kind of felt like, hey, man, something needs to be said. And what resulted out there was it was not OK. You know, and the big thing about having 26 men on your team is they're always going to pick you up. When you're struggling, you have your team picks you up, you know, it makes it a little bit easier. But, you know, we couldn't help him on the offensive side that day, and we struggled as an offense. So I just felt like, you know, he needed to know that we had his back there big time. And it just, in that moment, I just felt like that was the right thing to do.
What was your, I'm assuming that at some point, the next time he saw each other, what do you remember about his reaction then?
He came and gave me a big hug. I was getting work done. He came and gave me a big hug, and I was really, really appreciative of what he did. He sent me a text two later and was really appreciative. And It's just something that you look at winning teams and they bond. They have tight connections with everybody. I've played on winning teams, winning organizations. And that was one thing I noticed was everybody has each other's back. You know, when something bad happens, it's not just one person's fault, it's everybody's fault. We all could have been better in every situation. So, coming over here with a young core and a really good group of guys, we brought in some older players that had been around the game, won World Series, played in deep into postseason, and I think that's what's the big changes for us is now we're kind of showing like, hey, we're not just a young group of guys, or we're not just the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like we have a legitimate shot here to play some good ball throughout the year. So we want everybody to be comfortable with each other and on their A game as long as they can.
So I love the stories of great teammates. Like last year, I worked on a long story about Kyle Schwarber, who, the backstories from the coaches and players where he's literally verbalizing as, they're on a team bus. Man, how do we help out, player A? How can we draw this guy in a little closer? For you and your experience in baseball, who were some of the models of that as you were coming up?
Devin Travis was a big one that really
Really?
just
Okay.
kind of showed me like how to handle being a professional. Justin Smoke was a big one. Kind of took me to the side. Anytime I did something wrong or I felt like I needed somebody to talk to or ask questions about how to be a big leaguer, Smokey would always answer those questions for me in a truthful and honest way, whether I liked it or not. It's just it all just every teammate you have is going to impact you in a different way. So I think for myself, always kind of being a jokester and messing around and having fun, like when somebody would pull me to the side and say something, like I had to be able to turn that switch and understand, and be good at what I do. And for me, it was just the everyday people that you come in contact with, coaches and players, and even field staff where you don't see them on the field. I've been very fortunate to come through a good organization when I was young, play for them for a long time, go to another organization that has a winning tradition and to be a part of that. So I think I've had a lot of people impact me in a positive
So,
way.
Alex Anthopoulos, who, as used to be the general manager of the Blue Jays, will tell you that when he started his career, he was more of the, from the perspective of an analyst, and that he didn't really believe in clubhouse culture. It wasn't that big of a deal. But then Mark DeRosa educated him, so to speak, and said, no, it's really important over a long season. And it's something that, when you see the Braves now under Alex, they're really good at that. Based on your experience playing, why is that so important? Why is it so important to try to foster a good culture?
You spend 180 days with the guys, 162 games, 180 days, what, 46 days of spring training. You spend more time with them than you spend with your own families. They're your brothers or your family. They go to war for you. They battle with you. They ride the ups and downs with you. You lean on their shoulder when you're struggling, and they lean on yours. I mean, they're basically your safety net everywhere you go. So, no matter how good you are, if you can't mesh with the clubhouse, it's tough to win. You look at I was on the Brewers team that got beat by the Braves when they won the World Series, and they were not good in the first half of the season. Second half, they were a different team. Clubhouse came together. They played good. Everybody was a great group of guys in there. And then, you get into a playoffs, and you never know what's going to happen. I mean, look at the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. They were both the last teams in this past year. But you talk to guys on both those teams, and they're just surrounded with great clubhouse guys. I mean, you hear nothing but good things about Christian Walker, and then you have Marcus Semien over with the Rangers. You have all the, you have these glue guys that just constantly are putting together good days off the field and in the clubhouse. They're just being the good guys every day, same guy every single day. And those are the people you need. The more you have those, obviously, the easier the struggles are throughout the season.
How good are the 2024 Pirates?
We're pretty good. I think we're really good. We're, I don't know, 15 or 16 games into the season, so it's still really early. It's April, but you keep playing the way we do. We're gonna have, like I said, ups and downs, and if you can ride that wave as long as you can, win as many games as you can, just take it day by day, all that cliche stuff. We're gonna be good. We have a good core, good group of guys that are contributing. There's certain players that aren't playing well, certain players that are playing really well, and you ride those waves with those players. The guys that are hot, you ride their wave as long as they can, and then when they're struggling, you just want a couple other guys that are hot. It goes through all that, but It's still early in the season, but we're playing really good baseball. We're just trying to take it game by game, win every game we can, play the best baseball we can, and be a great group of guys.
Ratty, thanks for doing this, and thanks for inspiring us.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America or all around the world. Or you go to his website, ToddRadom.com. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Buster. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're wearing number 42, the hat. We've now had that hat worn twice in 2 days, Taylor, in doing these tapings. We had Jessica Mendoza yesterday. Same type of hat. Pretty cool. Did you have something to do with that one?
No, not at all. Not at all. Okay. It's just, you know, if you can honor Jackie during Jackie Robinson week, and I guess it's after, but I haven't talked to you since, just seemed very appropriate.
Well, and this week's edition of Ballpark and Beyond has something to do with Jackie Robinson. But before we get to that, Taylor, I know you got a question that was posed to Todd and myself.
Yeah, we got a question from Van City Red Sox fan at DJ Beef Thief. Great name. This person wrote in, I enjoyed Todd's reading of the Mantle tape measure home run. What's your opinion on the Ted Williams red seat home run? Some people doubt this.
Yeah, who was the player this week recently said that? Was it Tony Casas?
I believe so. But I remember reading this too earlier in the week. No question.
Yeah, that he basically was asking, you know, raising doubts about whether or not that's true. And David Ortiz years ago said something very similar. What's your opinion, Todd?
Well, I'll bring a question to you guys before I answer. I assume both of you, or one of you at least, has walked around out in the bleachers and looked out at home plate from that perspective. There's no way. There's no way. There's no way. What do you think?
I think he did it. I think
how do you say that?
The wind is blowing right. Everything is going right. I think that's what happened. I just can't imagine that they would just make that up.
What did we talk about last week? Print the legend? I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to dive into the deep dark pool of conspiracy theories with this or any other thing for that matter. But again, having walked around out there, I've never seen anybody come close to that. And I've been to Fenway for a lot of games like you have, Buster.
Okay. Well, we split. Taylor, have you ever walked out there at Fenway? Have you ever seen the red seat?
No, I've never been to Fenway, never seen the red seat. Huge blind spot for me. I would love for you guys to take me.
Okay. Well, come next week.
Right? Oh, man.
We got Sunday Night Baseball. We got the Red Sox playing host to the Chicago Cubs. Come on.
Oh, we'll talk. We'll talk after we're done with this call here, Buster. I'm interested.
Nice. All right. Let's get to Ballpark and Beyond, Todd.
All right, Buster. Today, we are visiting a TD Bank branch at the corner of Montague and Court Streets in Brooklyn Heights, just north of Borough Hall. This building dates to 1962, but prior to that, it was the site of 215 Montague Street and the Mechanics Bank Building, a 10-story structure built in 1896 and raised in 1959 in order to widen the streets around what's now Cadman Plaza. There's a small plaque there noting the fact that it hosted the Brooklyn Dodgers offices from 1938 until they left the borough for LA 2 decades later. and that on August 28, 1945, it was the site of the first meeting between Jackie Robinson and Dodgers president and GM Branch Rickey. At 10 o'clock that morning, just 2 weeks after Japan's surrender to end the Second World War, Robinson, accompanied by Dodgers scout Clyde Sukeforth, took the elevator up to the fourth floor. 3 hours later, they took the same elevator back down, with Robinson having reached an agreement to accept a contract with the Montreal Royals, the top Dodger affiliate, by November 1st. This was the first formal step in Jackie's journey as he broke baseball's modern color barrier. Robinson, the shortstop of the Negro League's Kansas City Monarchs, was a known commodity to many, having starred in three sports at UCLA before the war, but the agreement that he signed was a closely guarded secret. The pretense of the meeting and Sukeforth's scouting trip to see Robinson was that the club was stocking talent for a new Negro League, the United States League, and for their team, the Brooklyn Brown Dodgers. Once the meeting began, Rickey telegraphed his true intentions. He asked questions and sized up the young Robinson, and he tested him on how he would handle the inevitable racial abuse that was to come once he integrated the Dodgers and Major League Baseball. According to Rickey, he asked Robinson how he'd react to a hot-headed player punching him in the face, to which Robinson supposedly replied, "I've got two cheeks, that it?" Robinson famously asked, "Do you want a ball player who's afraid to fight back?" And Rickey's reply was, "I want a ball player with guts enough not to fight back. You've got to do this job with base hits and stolen bases and fielding ground balls, Jackie, nothing else." This tacit agreement was to last for three seasons. Rickey knew he had the right man for the job, and he stressed the fact that if they failed, no one was likely to take the same chance for another 20 years. A couple of months later, on October 23rd, 1945, Jackie Robinson officially signed the contract. He famously made his Brooklyn debut at Ebbets Field on April 15th, 1947, but at 215 Montague Street in Brooklyn on the morning of August 28th, 1945, the wheels to this historic moment were set in motion, and that is this week's stop on our season-long journey to the ballpark and beyond.
Todd, I'd never seen that reference from Branch Rickey, or maybe I have and I don't remember it. But to the assertion that if it didn't happen then, that it wouldn't have happened for another 20 years, that's amazing to think about. Like the idea that you'd go into the mid-60s potentially, but you know what? It makes sense because there was momentum coming out of World War II when there was an all hands on deck mentality. Everyone was expected to contribute in some form or fashion. And maybe that time did make it absolutely perfect right then. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Buster, when I was researching this segment, I found that quote from Rickey. Wow. I don't recall where it was from. And to your point, I'd never seen it before either. And when you think about it, and this has been spoken about quite a bit, the right man, right place. But what if he failed? What if he did not perform well? It probably wasn't a question of how he comported himself, but what if he got off to a cold start and got put on the bench 20 years? I mean, think about the fact that MLB, according to Rickey, might not have fully integrated until 1967. It's really hard to fathom, right?
Well, and you do wonder, as you begin to think about sort of the dominoes of history and how they fell after that, if Jackie Robinson doesn't debut, if that doesn't happen then, and then there's a delay with that, do we have, you know, court decisions like Brown versus Board of Education? You know, is that decision, or did Jackie Robinson emergence in Major League Baseball, you know, a person of such prominence, did that build momentum for other political events? I got to believe it did in some form or fashion.
Yeah, you know this, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners do as well. Jackie Robinson's debut 77 years ago at this point, right, is cited as really one of the early, really important moments in the civil rights movement, the whole civil rights movement. And very famously, you know, the U.S. military, the armed forces of the United States were not integrated until after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier on that day in 1947. So, yeah, a lot of history happened in a hurry in the 1950s and, of course, in the 1960s. But 1947 is almost prehistory when it comes to that movement. So it's a pretty amazing moment. It was then, and it really still resonates for many reasons, including that today.
Well, it makes you understand even more, you know, why Rachel Robinson. I've seen interviews where they're talking about Branch Rickey and the type of person that he was. You understand why they had such admiration for him in that time, that he was going to be a leader through that situation. You're going to say something?
No, I was going to say, I just recently this week on social media, you might have seen it too. There was about a 15-minute interview in 1972 with Jackie Robinson, Dick Cavett doing the interview. So this is shortly before Robinson passed. He's 53. He's got diabetes. And he talks about the journey. And by then he was, I think, you know, I don't know. I don't want to use the word cynical, but, you know, he knew about political power and who he supported, who he was disappointed in, who he was supportive of. And he came right out and said there in this thing, it's really interesting to see it, how Branch Rickey was the man with this moment and that they did it together and that it likely wouldn't have happened without him.
I'm going to go back and watch that again. You're right. It's hard to imagine. That's for sure. It's hard to imagine how different it would have been if not for for Jackie Robinson, if not for Branch Rickey. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
Week three, gentlemen. Which of these events occurred most recently? Is it A, the Astros did not play in the American League Championship Series? Is it B, the Atlanta Braves made their home debut at Truist Park? Is it C, Derek Jeter had his number two retired by the New York Yankees? Or is it D, the Detroit Tigers last made the postseason? Which of these events occurred most recently? The Astros didn't make the ALCS. The Braves made their debut at Truist Park. Derek Jeter gets his number two retired. Or the Tigers last made the postseason?
What you got, Taylor?
I'll go Jeter getting his number retired.
That's what I got, too.
Well, you're both right. Congratulations. Yes. You're both smart.
We're on the board, Taylor.
Love it.
We hadn't gotten one right this year. So, you know, our shame is set aside for a moment anyway.
Oh, no. I got one right last week, Buster.
Yes.
How dare you?
The number of countries that MLB regular season games have been played in. Taylor got the 7.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
How quickly
I wish
forget.
I hadn't remembered that. Mm. Yeah. I wish that never happened. I wish Taylor never got one right ever.
I had a bad year last year, Buster.
Bitter Boulevard.
Yeah, no kidding. I feel bad. And it's late April or mid-April, and I shouldn't be feeling that way, but I am. I'm feeling very defensive. Wow. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this. Always fun to talk with you.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
You're doing great because you're relieved that you didn't get roped into this week's quiz with Todd Radom. See, I knew it. A couple weeks ago, you signed on a little bit early, and then I asked you to be part of the quiz. And what I've noticed the last couple weeks is when you have the time where we're like, hey, Sarah, can you check in at, you know, 10:35 or whatever time it is, you're kind of lagging a little bit, and you've never lagged before. And then I realized today it's because you don't want to do the quiz. Like, there's a fear of you in the quiz.
I don't want to be wrong. I don't like being wrong. And that's why I'm honored to be part of, obviously, we've been having kind of a good cadence with Todd recording right before me for the Friday episodes. But yeah, I'm a little jumpy. I'm a little bit like, if I come on early, am I going to make a fool of myself? I never know.
Yeah. Taylor, what do you think?
I knew exactly what she heard. I were playing a cat and mouse game because she knew what I was up to and I knew what she was up to. And I'm glad we tricked her a little bit today, but you're going to walk through that trap door again, Sarah. Don't worry, when you least expect it.
Yeah, man. It's like watching two chess players going at it right now. Taylor and Sarah. Sarah trying to avoid the quiz. I would say this too. You said before we started, before you started taping today, when Todd was on, because we played a little trick on you beforehand and pretended that the quiz was actually going on when you jumped in. You mentioned that he did the Indiana Fever logo. I didn't know that until you said that. And then I just looked at on social media. He posted the logo. He does all kinds of stuff.
It's amazing. Yeah, I loved he posted that. Obviously, all the hype surrounding Caitlin Clark are getting drafted number one overall by the Fever. But I love it. I mean, There's so many. I often think of him with baseball logos, but as you said, here I am, kind of him, tangentially thinking about WNBA, all of the great excitement around that. And here's Todd, how he handled that as well, which is really, really cool to see.
And you said your mom recognized his work, even without knowing that it was his work?
That is what she claimed. She told me yesterday she saw him post that. And she was like, yeah, that looked like he had done it. And that made sense to me.
Oh, man. That's awesome. All right. Let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 94. So yesterday, on Wednesday, I should say, was a very odd slate of baseball. We had 16 games with the latest game started at like 7 o'clock, I believe. And one of those late games, the 7 o'clock Eastern game, was Tanner Houck swinging 94 pitch shutout for the Red Sox against the Guardians. So if you're a baseball fan, you probably know the term emmatix, but I never expect people to know that. So emmatix is a 9-inning, a complete game shutout on fewer than 100 pitches. So Tanner Houck was the first by a Red Sox pitch since Clay Buchholz in 2014. The really incredible thing about this game, I mentioned not a lot of games in the evening on Wednesday. This game took an hour and 49 minutes. It was the shortest 9-inning game in Major League Baseball since the Armando Galarraga near perfect game in June of 2010. Think about that. Even with the pitch timer last year, early 2010s, guys like Roy Halladay, what have you, no team had played the game that short since 2010. And of course, it was this very notable, famous game. I just thought that was incredible.
Number two.
Number two is, we'll go with four. For the four members of the Ledger family, who will now officially, as of Thursday, have been major leaguers. So Al and Mark Ledger are about to become, and by the time you're listening, will have become the first pair of MLB brothers to each have a son also reach the majors. And Jack Ledger, Al Ledger's son, and Mark Jr., Mark Ledger's son. Wow. Really, really incredible to think about. There have been so many brothers in MLB history. So many incredible families. You think of the Boones. You think of so many others. And for none of those have had two brothers who each had a son who also made it. Really, really incredible to think about.
Number one.
Number one is three for Taylor's Orioles. So they've hit at least three home runs in five straight games now. They got to three on Wednesday in dramatic fashion with Cedric Mullins hitting a walk-off home run for their third home run of the game. Three or more home runs in five straight games is tied for the second longest such streak by any team since 1900. And the only team to do more was also an Orioles team. It was the 1987 Orioles who did it in six straight, which is fascinating to me because that is not one of the better teams in MLB history by any stretch of the imagination, but they have six straight games with at least three home runs, which at least for now is a record. And I love that the Orioles are on this list multiple times.
All right, and thanks for correcting me about Tanner Houck. I said earlier in the podcast that it was an hour and 48, and you're right, it was an hour and 49. You and I were texting back and forth the other day about Mookie Betts and his incredible start. I wrote a piece this week on ESPN.com that I think that this is the best Mookie Betts we've ever seen, the best version of him with how well he's playing. Are you buying that statement, or are you going, no, that's crazy?
No, I think I am because, you know, he's really undergone a transformation, really in his time with the Dodgers. He's become this almost unheard of until him and Ronald Acuña Jr. version of a power hitting leadoff hitter, which we really had not seen in this version until those two guys. And I think that everything he has done in his career has really led to this point. You know, we're texting about his swings and misses in the zone. Entering Sunday, he only had five of them, only 82 swings in the zone. Obviously, it's up a bit more since then, as we're talking on Thursday, but it feels like everything that made him so good in 2018 when he won the MVP, he is somehow made even better now.
That's crazy. And it is interesting to hear the stories from Dave Roberts about how they really think that the move from the outfield to the infield helped to keep him focused, you know, helped improve his focus because it was a new challenge. It makes absolute sense. It's like a, you know, a great professor, you know, switching from one topic to another, you know, and it seems like he's completely embracing that. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets. Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. Bleacher Tweets are brought to you by DirecTV. Get the best of live sports and streaming together. No satellite dish required. Now stream DirecTV satellite free. You can call us. The Bleacher Tweet voicemail box is 406-404-8460. That information is in the show notes, as well as our email address, bleachertweets@gmail.com. Let's go to the voicemails.
Hey, Buster. This is Brad from Chattanooga. And I'm in Braves country, as you know. And one thing that keeps me from believing the Braves can win a World Series is something that I've started to call the dirt bag or I don't want to see these guys in a dark alley factor. You know, if you look at the Braves, they've got great players, but a bunch of pretty boys. Whereas you look at someone, a team like the Phillies, they definitely have guys who I consider dirtbags or guys I wouldn't want to see in a fight, JT Realmuto, Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos. And it's a little bit of the 86 Mets theory, but I wonder what you think of that. Are the Braves too pretty to have the toughness to win a World Series?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that the toughness has a part of it. Because we saw a lot of the guys who are on this year's team were on the team in 2021 when they won the World Series. I do wonder if there's something to the idea that if you have to fight your way into the postseason and through the early rounds of the postseason, that if you build up momentum, and on the other hand, if you're like the Braves were last year, where they hit all those home runs and they kind of coasted to a division title, if that sets them up for bad things in the postseason. You think about, you know, last year, the Rangers barely scrape in to get in, and then they're basically playing for their lives at the beginning of the postseason, and they seem to build on that. I think the Braves did the same thing when they won the World Series in 21. Taylor, does that make sense? I think there's more of that, where I do think there's an advantage where you have to fight your way through the postseason as opposed to just sort of, you know, just sort of slacking through the regular season and winning a division easily. I don't think you really battle tested.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that train of thought. And Beckett Hutchison, he emailed us. He wrote a massive Brave fan. Do you think that the Braves could still win the division even without Spencer Strider? I think you're kind of saying yes, they could. You got him atop the power rankings right now.
Yeah, I think they could easily win the division. You know, I don't think the Phillies are necessarily as good of a regular season team as the Braves. But as with the Dodgers, the big question with the Braves is going to be what happens once you reach the postseason? And, you know, could they go beyond winning the division? I don't know. I do think they're going to have to add a starting pitcher at some point during the regular season.
Coach DeMattis emailed us. He wrote, I know the Astros are not playing well and they are 6-14, but I don't believe they are done by any means. Not sure when Luis Garcia is coming back this year, if he is at all. I'm curious to see how they do when Verlander, Urquidy, Framber, Javier are all healthy this year. I cannot imagine their bullpen will keep up this horde pace. Please let me know your thoughts. Love the pod. The Astros just got swept by the Braves. That was a tough look for them. What do you think?
I do think the Astros are in trouble because of the depth of their pitching. You know, it'll be interesting. Ryan Pressly, you know, being moved from the closer role with the signing of Josh Hader into the setup role, he just doesn't seem the same. And I don't know if it's an early season thing with his breaking ball, but they had three guys leave the bullpen who are really important. The injuries to the starting rotation early this year, they just don't have as much depth. I'm with you. I wouldn't write them off. They have too many great position players in particular, and they do have some resources among their starting pitchers. You would think that that would get better, but I've got a bit of a red flag on the Astros now saying they might be in trouble.
Last one for the week, Don Irvine writes, and how many more games would the Nationals win if they replace Patrick Corbin with another young starter? Why won't they admit defeat and eat his contract rather than watch him continue to flail on the mound? Yikes.
Well, separate of Patrick Corbin's situation, you know this, Taylor, they probably have the cheapest ownership in baseball.
Yeah.
Right? You know, they've had this before Dave Martinez, they had this endless cycle of managers getting run out after 1 or 2 years because of salary stuff. Look, that's probably has something to do with the fact that they feel like we're just going to get as much out of Patrick Corbin as we can. That all said, I will tell you, one of the surprising things that I heard when we had them in the Little League Classic last year was what a positive and important teammate Patrick Corbin was. You know, I was talking with Tim about leadership, and I'm not saying you keep a guy on the team who's he's absolutely awful and, you know, because he's a good leader. But I would tell you this, everyone in that organization seems to think he adds when the days that he doesn't pitch.
That is an interesting nugget. The nugget I will add is when Patrick Corbin is pitching, check out those team totals on your ESPN bet account and maybe consider the over. That's what I would say for Patrick Corbin.
Man. Well, that's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks to Rowdy, to Les, to Sarah, to Todd, to Tim, and of course to Taylor. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.